You know, I'm telling you, man, the station has some great movies. For
those
this
one
you,
was on?
That movie, I watched that entire movie. But in case you folks aren't aware of a movie called Rotor, about it's basically a cross between Terminator and RoboCop, because it's a robotic officer that looks like the Terminator monster from T2. And Rotor stands for Robotic Officer Tactical Operations Research. And that is the name of this robot. And the way the storyline goes, some company made this robot as a prototype. All right, decided to go ahead for future use. Now, somehow they could foresee that 25 years in the future, this robot would be needed. Problem is, it's not needed right now. And its directive, they actually use the term directive for the RoboCop knockoff, is to judge and execute. So he finds people guilty of a crime and executes punishment right there. So he's just running around killing people that he thinks are ne'er-do-wells and chasing people down to go ahead and execute their punishment. It's horrible, horrible.
It wasn't even fun?
Oh, yeah, it was, because it was comical. He gets in a fight with these three guys, and one of them is this huge steroid-induced, you know, 90s WWF wrestler-looking guy, and he just rips off his shirt. And the Rotor barely moves and grabs him by the throat and just knocks him out and drops him on the ground. It is horrible. Terrible movie. But one I highly recommend.
Well, that sounds like a conspiracy.
Possibly.
Let's get right into episode 47 of Scary Dad Podcast, where we're going to talk the second part of our conspiracy theories series.
Yes. Scott, which was fun.
Scott's going to throw them out there, and we're going to talk about what's going on in the world of conspiracy theories. This is our first episode of September. Episode 47. We got, God, just a couple... five more until we hit a year.
Yep. Labor Day weekend. I might be out of town this weekend.
Yeah, we can talk about what we're doing today, because we're wizards. Anyway, happy September. Ninth month. We're getting closer and closer to Halloween.
Yes.
So,
don't forget about our big Halloween event, October 14th. We're picking up more and more sponsors. It's showing like it's going to be a pretty damn good time.
Yeah. I'm really excited. This is going to be a blast. So without further ado, we got a long, long history segment today. So let's get into old business.
Business.
1666, the Great Fire of London. 10,000 buildings, including St. Paul's Cathedral, were destroyed. But only 6 people are known to have died.
I can see in 1666 you don't have the most efficient fire force.
Yeah.
And everything is pretty much built as a tinder box that's going to go up fast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see something like that occurring. They used to occur, actually, fairly often.
Big fires.
Compared to now, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But, man, that's pretty miraculous. If 10,000 buildings burnt and only 6 people died, it's pretty crazy. Here's some fun one. 1698. Tsar Peter I of Russia imposes a tax on beards for all men except for clergy and peasantry.
As well there should be. Imagine if you taxed the hipster community for their beards right now and charge like by the inch. Makes pretty good money.
You would make some money. Well, apparently the purpose of it was Russians were mostly bearded.
Right.
And it was the fashion in Europe at the time to be close shaven. And he was of the opinion that if he taxed beards, people would shave.
They'd become more metropolitan.
They would become more metropolitan. So that's government solutions for things where there's not actually a problem. He just thought that it's like going to your grandpa and being like, come on, Gramps, you're behind the times. You know?
And then he was choked by an electric cord. I've always wondered about that one.
Like what it was that got it?
You know, how can like something jump up in the air and spin? You know, it's not like it's a helicopter. It was like a curling iron, a blow dryer, or something like that.
All right. 1793, the French Reign of Terror begins. This is in the French Revolution. The good old French saw what happened in the Americas, and they decided they were going to have a party of their own.
Right.
What ended up happening is that between 1793 and 1794, there were 16,594 official death sentences in France.
Yes, so the guillotine became a household name after that.
Of which 2,639 were in Paris. The number of deaths was actually much higher because people died in prison, disease, right, and suicide. Not to mention, you know, fighting back against the people coming to collect you.
Right. It's one of the mistakes in that movie's coming up. If you watch that lawnmower, its wheels are above the ground whenever it starts moving. It's actually not making any contact, and it's spinning too slow.
So we'll cut our history segment for just a second. A couple episodes ago, we talked about we went and did a double feature, Stephen King, a double feature at the Alamo Draft House.
And this movie's actually coming up for one of the double features here.
We talked with probably a dozen people about Stephen King movies, their favorites. And
watch, here it comes.
Remember, in Stephen King's, you know, he's had something like 45 to 50 movies made, adaptations of his works. And so starting with Carrie in 1976 and then culminating with It coming out this year, something like 50 movies and some of his best works. Academy Award winners like The Green Mile and Shawshank Redemption and Stand By Me and critical works of vast importance. Pretty much everybody we talked to, their favorite Stephen King movie is Maximum Overdrive.
I love it.
It's a great movie.
But the guy at the Alamo that described it as a cocaine addict's fever dream was spot on.
Oh, with absolutely. Just imagine, right now, Stephen King is right behind this camera, snorting.
That's going to be awesome.
Sorry, man, we've been watching. It's pretty damn awesome.
I like this movie.
1836, Sam Houston is elected the first president of the Republic of Texas.
And who knew he'd have a huge statue on, was it Highway?
It's over in on Main Street.
Yeah, 288. 288 South is a huge one.
That's Stephen F. Austin.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sam Houston is up north at Huntsville.
Yeah.
I always wanted to go paint Adidas stripes on his shoes. 1887, more fire. The fire at Royal Theatre in Exeter, England kills 186.
This theater fire killed that many. And you know, this is the thing about, I was thinking about Great Fire of London. Was it, depending, little things like depending on what time of the day it occurred, there's so many things that could drastically change the death toll.
Absolutely.
You know, if it would have happened at night while everybody was sleeping, it probably would have been a huge number.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. They, you know, made enough noise, enough people came outside and watched it moving through.
Right. Well, people may have been at work, you know, they just in the neighborhood, heard about it, ran home, got everybody out, you know. But it could have been a totally different story. Just something as simple as the time of day.
Absolutely. 1945. A Soviet Union embassy clerk defects to Canada and reveals Soviet espionage, officially starting the Cold War. So, this date in 1945.
It kind of fits in with our conspiracy theory day also.
A little bit. And then on this date in 1972, the Munich Massacre occurred. Palestinian terrorists killed 11 Israeli athletes at the Olympics.
And that was revenge for a Mossad killing, wasn't it?
That was something.
Yeah.
They're always pissed off about something over there.
Yeah. For a long time.
Forever.
Way before 1972.
All right. 1847, notable births. Jesse James.
The motorcycle guy or the other one?
He's the American outlaw.
Yeah.
So I was... somebody posted something the other day on one of the Facebook groups I'm in. It's called, like, the Classic Monster Squad. I was posting these comic books that came out in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
One of them was, like, Jesse James meets Frankenstein Monster.
Oh, God.
Another one was Billy the Kid meets Dracula. Like,
They were some of the first comic book figures. You know,
yeah.
All these outlaws in the West. I love that scene in Young Guns 2. Where the kid has the book and he's like, it's called Billy the Kid, Prince of Piss. He goes, Pistoliers.
1929, Bob Newhart.
I used to like the Newhart show a lot.
Yeah, my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl. Yeah, we're not talking Bob Hope. Bob Newhart's funny.
Yeah, he was funny. I got some of his stand up actually. It's even just because of his dry delivery, it's pretty good.
1940, Miss Raquel Welch. Not much about horror, but
she's hot.
1946, Freddie Mercury. That's
huge.
That's one hell of a dude right there.
Yep.
1951, Michael Keaton.
Big part of our lives, our show, and just in pop culture in general.
1973, happy birthday to Rose McGowan.
Is she still with Marilyn Manson?
No.
Okay. I just saw that lasting for a long time.
I didn't do it. All right. Notable deaths on this date in 1877, Crazy Horse. And then in 2001, Justin Wilson, the Cajun chef.
From Mississippi.
Was he from Mississippi?
The Cajun chef from Mississippi. You know, some of his old stand-up I got on Reel to Reel, which is pretty cool.
He's got a thick accent.
Just the over-the-top accent. I used to watch that show all the time. I thought it was hilarious.
Tell you what. Yeah, my dad was a big fan of Justin Wilson. All right, so talk about some conspiracies. Throw them at me.
Well, let me give you a little bit of new news first.
Oh, man.
It's okay, Vera. I'm easy to forget about.
It's a conspiracy. It's a
conspiracy against me. Okay, something popped up on eBay recently, which I think is one of the coolest things that I've ever heard of that I would love to purchase, but unfortunately, it's probably going to go for a whole lot of money. You know John Saxon.
Mm-hmm.
Enter the Dragon. Nightmare on Elm Street, just been in a whole bunch of movies. Black Christmas was one of his first horror movies. This thing entitled How the Nightmare Began, just a little handwritten folder. Apparently, during filming of Dream Warriors, Saxon decided to put pen to paper and wrote and worked up a prequel to Nightmare on Elm Street. Pitched it, it got kicked back. It's for sale on eBay right now.
The screenplay,
yeah, and they've given some screenshots of some of the stuff that he wrote in there, and it's pretty damn cool what he had set up. And Saxon wrote it all himself, and like I said, tried to pitch it, and nobody went with it. The movie takes place years before the actual events on Elm Street, and Nancy was only 5 years old, okay, when this screenplay takes place, and she has a stepsister named Betsy Thompson. Betsy had joined this hippie commune, and this is what people have been able to get from the screenshots that he has on there so far. Donald, the John Saxon character, finds his daughter at the hippie commune, brings her back, and decides to bring her to a psychiatrist to try to get her help. The psychiatrist's name is Frederick Krueger, and that's the initial connection between Nancy and him. At the time of all this, Thompson family turmoil is going on. He's investigating the murder of a young boy who was stabbed with some kind of object that produces multiple wounds simultaneously. So Freddie was actually killing it at the time, and this man who just brought his daughter to this doctor is investigating the case. It's a pretty cool movie, sounds like. So a little while later, Betsy Thompson is killed. That's when they start looking at Freddie, because it's the cop's daughter that's investigating the case. They eventually kidnap Freddie in hopes of getting him to confess his crimes. He won't confess. He keeps denying it, so they burn him. And Freddie is born. Next thing you know, the youngest daughter, Nancy, is the one that is
being haunted.
Some of the other little asides to it. 1969, hippie commune is where this girl is held up at. This is Charles Manson. It's a reference to Charles Manson for sure. It sounds like it could have been an excellent movie, man. And I would love to read the rest of this script.
Whoever
buys it is probably going to keep it to themselves. But that's just cool as hell to see pop up on eBay. Okay. Apparently,
eBay also had, just recently, it's completely not horror related, but they had the first appearance of Wonder Woman. But you had to, like, pre-register to even look at the listing. Like, wow.
You can fill out this credit app first. We'll see if you can even buy it.
To even look. Just to look at the picture.
Right.
Wow.
Okay, wow. Fortunately, we still have tons of independent films coming out. Apparently, Hollywood is in a glut right now when it comes to coming up with original ideas for horror movies. So there's a list of remakes that are currently in the works floating around. And there's some new stuff on there that I didn't realize they were going to be doing. Some of them I'm pretty disappointed about hearing that they're going to redo. So we'll run through this list real quick. You can kick back, tell me what you think.
Got it.
1986 is The Fly.
Leave it alone.
I know, man. I cannot believe they're doing this. But they're saying that it's supposed to be released next year. We know so far J.D. Dillard is going to be directing it. He won an award at the Sundance Festival last year with a movie that he put together. He's going to be co-writing a remake of the classic The Fly for Fox. Yeah, they're redoing the 1986 version.
Man, should leave it alone.
Nah, I agree with you 100%. Pet Sematary.
Leave it alone.
I know, dude.
That movie's damn near perfect.
Most of these movies are going to say that. A movie which actually came on Comet TV yesterday. I was able to watch it. I hadn't seen it in a while. American Werewolf in London. Dude. I cannot believe it's like they have no ideas anymore. What we know, according to synopsis, keeping it in the family, John Landis' son Max is currently penning a script for this proposed Werewolf in London remake. Yeah.
I've recently rewatched a few of these. Mm-hmm. Werewolf in London is one that...
It took those Fright Night special effects for the werewolf and ran with them, dude. It was awesome.
Well, there was that, but... That's one of those movies, like Pet Sematary. Like, they captured the mood so well that the mood is a character.
Right.
Like, that's... Right? So you can't remake it unless you... Even if you do a scene-for-scene, like, reshoot, you're not going to catch that mood that they had in the originals.
Well, trust me, I'm not done yet, and you're going to continue saying why.
Right.
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers.
I'm going to tell you why I'm not happy about this. Okay? Have you ever read the comics? The comics are pretty good, too.
I read the original story.
Okay. Columbia Pictures is putting together the writing team of Mark Swift and Damian Shannon to write the reboot of Starship Troopers from 1997. Do you know what movie they recently did that is credited? The new Baywatch movie. The people that wrote the Baywatch movie are going to be doing 1997 Starship Troopers.
And the thing about Starship Troopers that nobody realizes, well, a lot of people realize it, but I think Starship Troopers was made by Paul Verhoeven, right?
Yes.
And Paul Verhoeven is the guy who also did RoboCop, which so many people don't realize RoboCop itself is a satire on the whole concept of RoboCop outside of all of the stuff we've talked about with the violence and the toys. The idea of RoboCop is corporatizing law enforcement.
Right.
And the danger of exploiting that, of having law enforcement in charge of, like, having a profit motive behind law enforcement. Starship Troopers is all 100% about propaganda. Government propaganda. So, in other words, the government wanted to fight those bugs to colonize their world. So they antagonized them, and whenever they started fighting back, then it became...
And you started public outcry, and you just got everybody right behind it.
That was pretty... I mean, you can take Starship Troopers, and you could change... The whole alien dynamic and just turn it into a 9/11 documentary.
Yeah.
And there's our conspiracy theory there, but we're not going to talk about whether, even our conspiracy episode, there's that whole, like, 9/11 is an inside job. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, doesn't matter, doesn't matter, doesn't matter. The response to 9/11 is 100% the response of Starship Troopers. We got hit, so we need to hit back harder. People who were not involved got hit back harder. They radicalized, hit back harder. It's like this never-ending cycle of war where the war machine makes the money and the people end up just getting slaughtered.
Yeah.
So, yes, unless they're going to rewrite it and film, like, what I was going to say is Starship Troopers, if done right, if they went a little more heavy-handed with the political intrigue, it could stand to be redone.
I think it could be recasted. Because the cast didn't fit the parts, except for Ace, the blonde-haired guy that wanted to be squad commander.
Yeah.
He was the only one that fit the bill. The rest of them were too pretty.
Uh-huh. Well, I think the point of that was you got your best and your brightest and you're killing them off.
Right.
But
okay, I'm going to skip this one to go to this one. 1981's Escape from New York. Didn't they try that?
Yeah, it was called Escape from L.A.
They're remaking John Carpenter's great, great movie. It's going to be Robert Rodriguez, which is good, but still.
Still.
Day of the Dead will be remade here pretty soon. 1985's Day of the Dead. So far as the second attempt at a remake of Day of the Dead, the current iteration is now filming under the direction of Jonathan Schacht. So, let's get those. Here we go. 1983's Cujo. That movie is perfect the way
that it is. That movie is perfect the way it is.
Yeah. The Birds, 1963's Alfred Hitchcock. I don't think they can redo a masterpiece. They'd have to do it to where they make it their own, to where it's not identical to it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're just going to go ahead and screw that one up. Okay, 1978's. This is actually coming on that same station here pretty soon. You got to make sure you tune into it. 1978's Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Whoa, man, they're really just...
Yeah. And so far as to be the fourth remake of the classic property, this time, they just talk about all the older ones that they've gone through. Pumpkinhead.
Wow.
And I bet you anyone in the world, Pumpkinhead looks nothing like he did in the originals. It's going to be CGI'd out or something like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. A Nightmare on Elm Street, 1984.
Again.
Because the thing about it is, Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger. And I could almost guarantee that Robert Englund is not going to be in this one.
Yeah.
The Grudge.
Jackie Earle Haley, well, I love that dude. He's not Freddy Krueger.
Right. The Grudge. I don't know if you remember that movie, The Grudge, Ju-on, whatever it was called in Japan. This one I'm going to say just because I love pronouncing this word, but 1922's Nosferatu.
They already remade that in the 70s.
Yeah, they're redoing it again.
Werner Herzog.
Studio 8 has brought on Robert Eggers to write and direct the remake of Nosferatu. And finally on this list, 1991's Jacob's Ladder. Dude, they're messing with so many movies, it's like... Like I said, it's like they ran out of ideas in the idea pool.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Or somebody got a hold of the Helming guy's Time Chicken and went back and was like, let's get some quality stuff. Crazy, crazy, dude. Please tell me you're done with old business. Or
I am done with, yes, that, I am done with new business.
That's frustrating.
But that's something to talk about and be aware of and just complain about. You know? The only way they won't make remakes is if the remakes don't make money.
The thing is, again, we've talked about it before. It's a heart and soul thing. It's like The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing was a remake, right? So, and it's superior to the original. The 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers was a damn good movie. But, I mean, it's almost a shot-for-shot remake of the original. It was a tribute. The Fly itself was a remake of the one from the 50s. And either 50s or 60s. And it is a superior product in every way, but it was an original, you know, it was done an original way. So there is some good to come out of remakes. But when you've got such legacy... And they're not going to get most of my money unless I hear some really good stuff about it. So conspiracy me, bro.
Okay. You like the movie They Live? I love the movie They Live. Okay. They Live has very similar roots in this conspiracy we're about to talk about. But we're going to talk about the conspiracy of reptilian society.
Okay.
You familiar with it?
I am a little bit.
Okay.
I had a friend years ago that tried to convince me that it was real. He had a book, and he's like, look at this. This was back in the day before the internet, and I was like, okay.
Okay. There's two things that people think where they came from. Okay. One is that they evolved here on Earth. Okay, this is the primary one. Then they left Earth and split for a while and returned millions of years later. And their DNA was human, and they were able just to come and merge back into society. Because of that, while they were out in space, they began encountering other cultures and beings. And somehow they were bred with a reptilian society where the DNA kind of merged. And then when they came back to Earth, that's when the reptilians came in and took power. And it was apparently a large grouping of people. When they came back, they just settled in all different countries and were able to gain power in every single one of these countries.
Okay.
And the way they're able to hide is people with the alien DNA that may look human at times, to where their brain can kind of be taken care of by the full reptilians, to where they just go and do their bidding and their commands.
So the reptilian people are actually people, they're just being controlled.
Right.
They're being manipulated.
Right, right. They're being manipulated by the actual reptilians.
And what do the reptilians do?
They've seized power to every country in this world. They run things. The reptilians are the ones that handle stuff.
But to what end?
To gain money. Gain money and power. Now, as far as to what end... the only thing I can see is just to gain power of Earth and over people and get them to do your bidding. I mean, do they have a group that's coming to take over? You never know.
Well, that's what I mean. This is one of those conspiracies. And again, I'm aware that it exists. I've never really dug too deeply into it. But this is one of those things that you can't prove a negative.
Right.
So you can't say. You can't say, you know, is it real? Well, you can't go out and pull somebody out and pull them apart and see if they're made out of lizard. So
right. But there are some theories that are floating around.
Okay.
As far as what they're trying to do. One belief is they need our gold to help stabilize the atmosphere on their own planet. There's no more gold in the Federal Reserve. Our money's backed up by nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did it all go?
Yeah.
It didn't disappear, you know. Another theory is that they just need to, they just have a need for power and control, like I said a little while ago, and they enjoy living life as rulers. And a third, incredibly metaphysical explanation, involves the reptilians living in the lower fourth dimension. Essentially, one of the main things reptilians try to do is cause human suffering to ensure that it is in constant conflict. The reason they want that is because reptilians actually consume negative energy, like jealousy, fear, and anger, as a source of food. So as long as they keep turmoil going, their dimension will survive.
Interesting. Well, again, you know, that's one of those things you can't prove the negative.
Right.
I have seen those video clips on YouTube where somebody will, like, their eyes will move and it'll be a video blip and they'll be like, look!
Think about Tom Cruise's teeth.
And Tom Cruise's teeth. Well, then, hey, you know, Scientology took... They've got, you know, not necessarily a reptilian, but an alien... demigod that they ascribe to, and there's mm-hmm. a whole lot of really intelligent and powerful people that follow that line of thinking, so
right.
You know,
you never know.
Never know. I tend to think, like we said before, with our ancient astronauts and aliens and stuff, that, you know, apparently authority is an addictive drug, more addictive than any other drug.
Power, yeah.
Power over other people is addictive. And but there are some caveats. So I'll go very briefly into this because it's a pretty big rabbit hole. But there are studies that have been done on addictive drugs. So heroin, cocaine, your higher level, highly addictive drugs, including nicotine and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is, this is not 100%, but it is statistically significant, is that your average healthy person isn't addicted easily to drugs. Drugs themselves are not 100% addictive.
Right.
But what they've discovered is that people who have a tendency or have a history of early childhood trauma, neglect, fear, and none of this necessarily needs to be intentional, but people from like war areas, even people whose maybe mother was abused in the womb, so in other words, if a pregnant woman, you know, if a building gets bombed and she's pregnant and she releases these fear hormones and the fetus absorbs them, these are people who are more likely to develop addictions to chemicals than others. And what they've come down and discovered is that whatever chemicals in your body that keep you at homeostasis, okay, so whatever homeostasis is, a mixture of hormones and whatever, that a normal healthy person who was held by their mother and, you know, played with by their father and they grew up healthy, mm-hmm. has a level of these chemicals in their body at a homeostasis of, call it 100%.
Right.
And then you have somebody else who had early childhood trauma or abuse or whatever, and their 100% is actually 70%. And these development centers in your brain stop growing when you're small. Mm-hmm. So when, like, by the time you're a teenager, that's as good as you're going to get.
Right.
So you got two individuals with dissimilar backgrounds, but they're physiologically they're the same. And individual one can take cocaine, and individual two can take cocaine. And individual one goes from 100% to 120% and goes, damn, that's awesome. Comes back down to 100% and goes on with his life.
Right.
Individual two takes that drug and goes from 70% to 100% or 90%. And they're feeling a bliss that is just short of this other person's normal. Mm-hmm. In well-being, in comfort in their bodies, and whatever. Individual two is more likely to seek some sort of medication,
right.
to bring their equilibrium up, and they're the ones who tend to get addicted more. Again, it is not perfect science, but it is a what they've been finding. So then you look at our war on drugs. And the people who are generally on drugs are generally poor, disaffected right. people who don't come from the best socioeconomic backgrounds, who have stress, fear, and anxiety in their yep. lives. And they're disproportional on the side of addicts. They're also disproportional on the side of
life, of society.
Well, of criminology, you know, criminality, of getting busted, of yep. going to jail and stuff like that. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you have a kid that grows up in these less privileged areas, they're more likely, not because of social structure, but just because of the physiology of their bodies, mm-hmm. if they try this thing, they're more likely to become addicted because of that, and then it cycles right. through. The conspiracy on that is that they know this, but just like RoboCop, when you put a profit motive on criminology or criminality, then
people want to maintain that profit.
You can maintain that status quo.
Right.
That said, the endorphins that you get from any addictive drug are more powerful and addictive whenever you're placed in authority. So people who get placed in positions of authority seek to go higher, mm-hmm. and they're more willing to do worse shit to gain it and keep it. And the higher they go up on the echelon. So that's why whenever you get to upper levels of authority in society, you have general psychopaths and sociopaths, because they are absolutely willing, without empathy, to do what it takes to take it and keep it. And that's not a lizard thing. That's a lizard brain thing. But that's not a non-mammalian.
Yeah, you don't have to be a lizard.
You don't have to be a lizard. You just right. have to be a person who's given some small amount of influence and loves it. So that's what I generally think of. It's like the people at the top, yeah, they're not fully human. They're psychopaths, they're sociopaths. That's why I'm generally mistrustful of government, because normal people don't want that kind of power.
Right.
So that kind of a power, it only attracts the worst among us. So then you have these people in positions of power that are the true evil.
Right.
And they're the ones that are willing to unleash bombs that'll kill millions, or wars that'll kill millions. so they can hold a field between, you know, France and Germany.
Yeah.
You know, that isn't even used by either side. You know, it's not like either side colonized it or whatever.
Right.
So that sort of stuff is what I think the darkness in human hearts is much worse than any lizard aliens. I think if there were lizard aliens, people like Rockefeller and you know, the Habsburgs and all them would have chased them out of town years ago.
Oh yeah, they would have figured something out too. Unless they are some. But you know, as far as reptilians in the government, according to McCarthy, it was a lot easier to prove there were communists in the government.
Well, it's one of those interesting things about McCarthy, because that McCarthy is one of those things that gets thrown in everybody's face whenever they talk about, you know, communism and infiltration and stuff like that.
Right.
And yeah, you know, McCarthy was not necessarily on the level, which, I mean, I think it's been proven that he had blank papers in his briefcase. So the whole Red Scare, and I'm not defending, in, you know, the whole concept of blacklisting or anything like that, but it's one of those things where if you look at what actually happened, like literally what happened was this. Obviously, Europe was in turmoil. All of the people who were refugees from the oppressive government came over here,
mm-hmm.
and they went straight into academia. Well, the problem is that Marxism and communism and those sorts of ideas sprung up in academia in Europe. So whenever you have all those people that come over here with those ideas, they have to go somewhere. And those ideas, if you look at chronological history from like the 40s to now,
mm-hmm.
you'll see a kind of a slow burn of leftist politics, socialist, communist idealism ramping up, kind of, you know, there used to be an American Communist Party.
Right.
That was pretty influential.
But I said, they probably still is. They're just not as influential as they used to be.
Well, no, if you look, there's certain things like Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals and everything, and they learned that infiltration was better, like it's easier to infiltrate than it is to attack head on.
Mm-hmm.
But McCarthy was screaming, it's kind of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They're here, and they're going to spread their ideas. They're going to spread right. that virus, and it eventually is going to bite us in the ass. And he was trying to stamp it out. Well, if you look from then to now, with the way like media, Hollywood, the entire Democratic Party, if you're a political Democrat, I'm not talking about absolutes, and I'm not saying that if you have political leanings that means you're a communist. That's not what
right.
I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is the Marxist communist doctrine attached itself
to the Democratic Party.
To the Democratic Party and certain aspects, academia, entertainment, and stuff like that. And so now we're looking at a time and place where there's vast sympathy for these ideas
mm-hmm.
that used to be terrifying. I mean, that's what Invasion of the Body Snatchers is about, is basically being assimilated by a communist nation.
Yeah.
And at the time the original Invasion of Body Snatchers came out, you had, like, domino theory, you had Korea falling, you had Russia expanding, you had China's, the massacres going on there. So it was something to be afraid of.
Yeah.
You know, the Stalin purges, all of that stuff. I mean, I think if you include famine and disease, plus just the bullet in the head, Marxist idealism is responsible for something like a quarter billion deaths in the
right.
20th century. So it's not really something to be sympathetic about.
Yeah.
And you can wrap it up in rhetoric and be like, well, we have to help the poor, so therefore we have to raise taxes, and we use these taxes to do other things, and it just kind of slowly gets out of control. Well, we're at a loggerheads now, if you're watching the news, between, you know, literally you have communists on one side and Nazis on the other fighting each other in the streets. And the rhetoric is so twisted that if you look at the fight and you say, well, that guy punched that guy first, then the other guy says, well, you're automatically a communist because you observed the fact that that guy punched that guy first.
Right.
Or the other way around. So
you're not agreeing with me, so
you're not agreeing with me, so therefore you're either with us or against us,
right?
And that's a dangerous place to be.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, maybe he didn't have a list of real names, but
the threat was there.
The threat was there, and his prophecies have come true.
Right.
So conspiracy? I don't know if it fits, but it is a little bit. It's a little telling.
Yeah.
To listen to some of his speeches and be like, well, they've infiltrated this and that and the other thing, they're here and they're there, and you're like, nah, could never happen. And now, like, oh, shit.
Look where we are.
Look where we are. So, that's as political as I like to get in this show.
I understand. Well, that was my last two.
Well, shit, dude, we're at only a 41 minutes, so we got to come up with something.
Let's talk about something. Let's see.
What do you think about Kennedy assassination?
I think it was just an assassination. I don't think there's any conspiracy behind that one.
My dad tells a story about how whenever Kennedy was shot, the radio and TV for... it was obvious that there was two shooters, and the police were actively tracking two shooters. And then all of a sudden, it went to one shooter, and then after that, the two shooter was never spoken of again.
Right.
But all day long, they were tracking two shooters. And he said that it was... Everybody was like, this is weird, because even if it had just turned out that it was only one shooter, you couldn't purge that much reporting in such a short period of time.
Right.
Not back then.
You know? Right.
So he said it was always fishy. So there's that one. Mm-hmm. Let's see. What's another good one?
Trying to think.
Fluoride.
Yeah, I got another one after that. Won't you?
Oh, I don't know. I
was going to say vaccinations.
Here's my thing on vaccinations. This is another one of those, you're either with us or against us, and if you have any kind of conversation about it, you're either an anti-vaxxer or you're...
You don't love the children.
You don't love the children, right? Here's the thing. Plausibility factor and following the money. If you want to think about a conspiracy theory, you always got to follow the money, and you also got to find out who stands to either gain or lose based on the conspiracy. So, the vaccines causing autism. Do I believe the vaccines cause autism? No, I do not.
I agree with you on that.
Do I believe that at some point an ingredient in a batch could have been bad and could have caused problems? Absolutely. We get bad shit all the time.
Right.
There's no magic bullet, so to speak. You always have something that goes off temperature. You have the restaurant report where they're dumping out poison food. People get sick and die. They have allergic reactions. Those sorts of things. So, could a batch or a series or something of a vaccine that contained this ingredient have led to or caused autism in some part of the population? I think it's plausible.
Right.
Right? Now that they would have removed that ingredient by this point, and, you know, they certainly wouldn't have left it in there. They certainly would have come up with some better idea. Right. But if they were looking at the difference between, oh shit, don't use those samples anymore, use these new clean samples, and don't say anything about it because we'd be up to our eyeballs in trillions of dollars of lawsuits, that's plausible. I think that's absolutely right. Plausible that it could have happened. Do I think that it happens anymore? I don't know, but I also follow some folks on Twitter that have some autistic kids that swear to God that they were normal kids until the day after they got their vaccines, and then that's whenever they became autistic. Both of my kids are fully vaccinated. I just have to trust. But the plausibility factor in who follows the money, it's not necessarily a matter of who stands to gain, but who stands to lose.
Right.
And I also find it somewhat funny that the people who clear themselves of the conspiracy, it's like, oh, do vaccines cause autism? No, they don't. Well, who says? Well, we do. Well, who are you? The people who make and administer the vaccines. Oh. Okay, well, I'll just take you at your word. I'm glad y'all figured that on out.
Well, where I'll stand on that one is, and I got this, I originally heard this on a, remember Penn and Teller's Bullshit, the show used to come on Showtime? Originally heard it on their show, and I researched it a little bit to see if it was actually true, but around the time the whole vaccine autism thing came into play, shortly beforehand, like the year before, the government changed the requirements for someone to be considered autistic,
mm-hmm.
and they broadened it.
Right.
So you're going to have an increase in autism if you broaden the definition of it.
Absolutely.
To include more people.
I saw that same thing on Penn and Teller, and they also showed all the people who used to die from all these diseases that
don't
anymore.
Right.
And that's one of those things that, you know, for the Scary Dad podcast where we talk about He-Man and Chainsaw Massacre, and we're talking about conspiracy theories, you know, you don't want to go too serious, and certainly this is not medical advice. All I'm saying is that with a conspiracy theory like Area 51, well, that was easy enough to keep under wraps until we had Google Earth. Now you can look at it.
Right. It's fair.
And if you Google Earth, Area 51, and there's a big blur, then you know they're hiding something.
like somebody used MS Paint to go ahead and do some trees.
Yeah. So, you know, like, again, there's a plausibility factor of, like, you just can't hide it because it's there. But some of these things, you know, it's like we said in the last episode, and it's like the whole cigarettes causing cancer thing. Okay, well, 100% of smokers don't die of lung cancer. Is it a contributing factor? Is it an ingredient? Is it this? Is it that? There's so many variables. There's so many factors.
Right.
That as a tobacco company, you could plausibly deny.
Deny it, yeah.
You could plausibly deny it. Even if the research is pointing that way, you could be like, ah, you know, use at your own risk. But we're not going to come out and say that our product causes cancer when there's enough proof that it doesn't. Always.
Yeah, and other things cause
it,
too.
I mean, it could, but gasoline's more cancer-causing,
right.
Carcinogenic than tobacco smoke. So there is a plausibility factor there. There's also, like, shit, you know, that's a quarter of the economy. You're going to have to step people down.
You can't,
you know. So there's that, too. But, you know who's good at conspiracies, and we should do a part three?
Chris.
Chris is all about conspiracies.
Yep.
He'll take you down some rabbit holes, man.
Have you thinking, scratching your head.
Dude. But the thing is, that guy's like an encyclopedia. He'll bring up dates and days and names and you know, it's like the caliber bullet that they killed themselves with, even though they were shot from a distance. And it's pretty crazy.
I have friends like that also that have like a lot more room in their brains for information than I do.
Yeah.
Remember we had this guy offshore that used to, you know, been a big football fan for a long time. And a lot of my friends are, and I have several friends that can like watch an NFL game and say, well, you know, he went to LSU or he went to, you know, University of Texas. I had a buddy of mine that would quote players' high schools. He had way too much information. I'm not from the same state as us either, from other high schools across the country. You know, you can see a guy in the NFL and know where he played football, you know, two periods back.
And, you know, so we're comic book nerds, so we know...
Yeah, I know a lot of useless information.
We know a lot of useless information. Everybody's got their hobbies and stuff. But the thing that got me, like, way out of sports, I used to work at a sporting goods store. That'll get you way out of sports right there. And the problem was, you know, working at a sporting goods store, I worked there in, like, 95, 96, basically when the Rockets were winning championships.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever they were playing in the playoffs, we had to order in twice as much of whoever they were playing against as Rocket stuff. We were the home team and we were in the playoffs.
That is bull.
And then we'd have people that would, like, because I was a manager, so I'd have to cover shifts if people didn't, like, so people would be, like either call in sick or call in late because they were either at games or the Rockets lost. Oh, boom. I'm like, dude, you're still working for $6 an hour. Like, these guys are millionaires. And you're working for $6 an hour and you're sad. Like, that just blows my mind, you know?
We're at
50 minutes. We got to come up with one more conspiracy.
Okay, let's see what we got. Oh, trying to put my thinking cap on.
What about the comics code? And
this is a long episode.
Well, no, just that whole thing where
they try to control content of the comics.
Trying to control content of the comics because they thought, you know, they were bad influences and Batman and Robin were gay. Did you know, little trivia tidbit, why was Batwoman and Batgirl created?
To try to throw people off?
Yeah, they were romantic interests for Batman and Robin because people, the government thought that Batman and Robin were gay.
It's just ridiculous, man.
And, you know, they were written for kids.
The government is quick to tell us what's bad for us.
Yeah. And yet they give us the power to decide which one of them will tell us what's bad for us.
You elect your captors.
Yep. You polish your chains, and you get and you get mad at your buddy because his chains are polished too, but he's polishing them with a different sponge. That's why I just don't play that game. It just drives me nuts. The whole... I get on social media to try to, like, escape the crap-ass day because it's too hot or there's mosquitoes or something. Got people fighting back and forth. And you got people... Dude, I blocked all kinds of folks from my own family because they're just like, politics, politics, politics. And I'm like, you realize that your opinion is a gnat fart in a hurricane. They're going to do what they're going to do, regardless of whether you're friends with your aunt again. Right?
Right.
So everybody should just...
The sun's going to rise tomorrow.
You know, unless they give you an opportunity to go vote specifically, like, should we go to war? Push yes or no, and that will decide. But I also think, you know, all these little flat tax ideas, all these libertarian ideas for flat tax and this and that, I really think that next time they decide they're going to have a war, of course, they want a war, so they're never going to do this. But, you know, all the people that are like, USA, USA, let's do it. Be like, okay, cool. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go bomb Uzbekistan or something. You down? Cool. Your bill for this is going to be $40,000. Now, you can pay it off over a short time, but you're getting that bill, just right, like a student loan. And if this thing goes longer than we expect, we'll just keep adding on to the bill, and you have to literally pay it. You don't get to send in some tax at the end of the year. There's no deficits. You got, boom, $40,000. There'd be a whole lot less people being like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. Yep.
It's easy to do when you got no skin in the game.
That's just it.
So. I think that's going to shut us down.
Yeah, I think so.
Hopefully it doesn't shut down the show. People will be writing in like, hey, I listened to your show and you said something that pissed me off. I'd be like, cool, you're like one of seven.
I just realized something. This is the this is going to drop the week after the great solar eclipse.
Uh-oh.
How much are you banking on the fact that the networks want somebody to go blind? Because they are harping on that. So, and the thing about it is, I lived through an eclipse. I remember the last full eclipse we had, I was in the fifth grade. And nobody went blind. They had us use pinhole boxes to look at the eclipse, but... Where you put the hole in, you look in, you can see the light of the sun, and see when it disappears and stuff. But yeah, nobody went blind. There were no articles about it. But you know, in the society we live in right now, people are going nuts buying these glasses. I mean, it was just crazy. If nothing happens and nobody goes blind, the next eclipse, nobody's going to buy any glasses.
Well, they don't need glasses. That's another one of those things, like, heard something somebody say the other day. They're like, every product that's ever been made or every service is the solution to a problem. Now, it may be a problem that's minor, mm-hmm. or a problem that doesn't exist till you make the product to solve it. But if you're smart,
there's something to solve a problem,
right? But then you got to look at, you know, solar eclipse glasses. Societies have risen and fallen on what they thought a solar eclipse meant.
And I bet you some of them looked up.
And I'm sure a lot of them looked up. But in general, you don't have a whole, like, plague of blindness crippling societies because an eclipse happened. Most people are smart enough that whenever they look up there and they see that bright light, it hurts and they look away.
Why is that hurting so bad?
They don't just sit there and be like, ooh. But now you got people that think that they're not going to be able to survive the night
without those glasses.
Without those glasses, and they're panicking.
Yeah.
They're panicking that they can't get these glasses, and it's just like, dude, the sun, for those of you who listen to the show who might not be aware what an eclipse is, that's when a celestial body passes between to another celestial body. So, like, when the moon passes, we get a when we pass across the moon, we get a lunar eclipse. When the moon passes across the sun, we get a solar eclipse. It happens pretty regularly. You could probably set your clock by it. They know it's happening because it happens around the same intervals. But the sun goes down every day because we end up on the opposite side of the earth. Every single night is technically an eclipse for us. Every day. And somehow or another,
we survive.
We survive.
I'm not saying not to use the glasses. Use the glasses, use pinhole boxes, whatever you got to do. But I'm just saying.
Or just look away when it hurts.
What am I saying? This drops after the eclipse. Somebody's going to hear this. They don't need to take my advice.
Oh, yeah. Y'all shouldn't have. Now that there's only like 12 survivors left, I sure am glad I had a pair of those glasses.
Everybody else is a pile of ass because they didn't have the glasses on. Could you see these piles of ash laying around and only people with glasses there? Or better yet, all the little piles of ash have some glasses on top.
Yeah.
Who cares about your eyes? Should have bought the suit.
Got two eyes and ash and some glasses. Everybody that was inside. It was like the Night of the Comet when she was in that movie room.
Yeah.
So she missed and everybody else died. Man.
I think we bored everybody enough.
Final conspiracy. What do you think about the child labor colony on Mars?
How can you prove it doesn't exist?
You can't go to Mars to see. And like I said, you know, whenever NASA was like, we do not have a child labor colony on Mars, I was like, that's...
You're incorrect.
That's precisely what somebody would say. No way, man.
Wouldn't he?
But you know, they're shitting a brick being like, how did they find out? We gotta move that bitch to Jupiter.
Quick.
Guys, I think that's it. We're going to let you go. Watch the end of Maximum Overdrive.
Peace out.
Keep it scary.
Later.